Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and once again, we are honored to have Ward Hannigan as our guest. Ward is the founder of ForeclosureForum.com. He has been the educator of real estate investors for the last 20-plus years, almost 30 now, and specifically in trustee sales. He's the most recognized name in trustee sales training and one of the most respected men in our business. Ward, welcome back.
Thank you.
You had mentioned in our last segment that you got kind of a surprise speaking invitation, and then there happened to be a 28-year-old in the audience named Greg Metcalf. At the time, who wasn't doing so well, you kind of changed his life, apparently.
Yes, he was looking for something else to do. He had his own janitorial service business, servicing a couple of old broken down office buildings up in the Orange County area. Hated it, and he was going to the real estate meetings, trying to search for something that he could latch on to. And so he heard me speak. He was just absolutely thrilled. And so I said, well, great, sure, well, do it, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And 2 weeks later, I showed up at the Area Congress in Real Estate, their meeting, and guess who was there once more? It was Greg Metcalf. And this time, he latched on to me, and he would not just leave. And he said, Ward, he said, you've got to teach me. I know what I want to do now. I absolutely do. I want to do exactly what you're doing. And I mean, and I said, you're investing in foreclosure? He said, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, good luck to you. Congratulations. And unfortunately, I wish I could recommend somebody that you could take the training from, but you know, I just don't know anybody that is really all that qualified. So do what I did, you know, reverse engineer the foreclosures that you're watching down at the sales. Go to the law library and read the codes on foreclosures, and go to your regular library and read a book by John Beck on foreclosures, and was it Robert Bruss? He had one,
right?
And stuff like that. And he said, no. I want you to teach me. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't do that. I'm not a trainer. I'm just doing my own deals, and that's it. In fact, you're lucky that you caught me in these first two talks, because I'm probably not going to give any more after this. And so he asked for my phone number, and I said, sure, if you have any questions, call me. So he had questions. He wanted me to train him in the worst way. I said, I don't even know, you know, where I'd start. I haven't even thought about training anybody. I don't even know how long it would be, you know, and stuff like that. And but you know, you've intrigued me a little bit, so I'll think about it, and I did, and it came out to have had to be 3 days. It just absolutely had to be 3 days. It had to be a day based on basics, and then a day based on title record searching, and which is a very, very critical skill, and then the third day is taking you down to the recorder's office and having you demonstrate to us that you've mastered title searching skills and stuff like that. And then we had to teach them formulas on where to stop your bidding. We call it the best bid and stuff like that. And and it's still 3 days to the present. And so he said, I'll do anything you ask me to do. And I said, well, my wife really doesn't want me to do it. One big reason why I'm not, because we don't need to create our own competition.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says, well, I'll sign anything your attorney comes up with, or anything my dad's attorney, whatever we do, I agree. I will never, ever, ever, ever come into your area of San Diego, no matter what. And you know, to this day, he never has.
Mm-hmm.
To this day, he has given San Diego a wide berth. So he kept up the talk back and forth between us, and finally I started speaking for other speakers because I enjoyed that so much, and he would find out somehow where I was. He'd be at that event and dogging me about the training. And so finally, I told him, I said, you know, Greg, it's going to take 3 days, and I can't see, and I'm not trying to balloon it into a longer time period to justify, you know, but I have to, I can't give 3 days to somebody for nothing. He said, I wouldn't expect you to.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, how much do you want? And I said, geez, I don't know. I hadn't even figured it out yet. And so my wife came to me, and she made a signal to put him on hold. And I put him on hold, and she said, tell him $1,000. I said, are you crazy? $1,000? You know, she says, that's the point. The point is that he'll say no. You know, I mean, if he's still living at home, he's not going to have $1,000, and that'll be it. That'll be the end. You'll feel better. So I came back, and I said, well, you know, I know I'm going to make you unhappy with this, but 3 days, 12-hour days, you know, we're going to have to charge you $1,000. And he said, that's fine. Oh, God. Oh, and my wife got so angry, she walked out of the office.
Oh.
And
you were kind of stuck.
And I was stuck. I had to train him. And it was, I called it my jack-in-the-box training because I had nothing set up for it, no classroom, nothing. I went out to the stationery store and bought one of those small whiteboards you could fit into a car,
mm-hmm.
a tripod, put that beside my desk. I call it a jack-in-the-box training because as I went through it with Greg, there's a good form you need. And I would go to the file and I'd dig that out. And so he walked out with a folder of about 30 forms. And I gave him a copy of my own resource manual that I had created to keep track of all the tricks and stuff that I learned myself. He went right back. He used his dad's 401k money or whatever it was and bought two properties, fantastic deals, within about a month. His father was so flabbergasted with the deals, he didn't want to resell them. He wanted to keep them, and he didn't want to refinance them.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden, there's Greg with, thinking he's got dollar signs in his eyes or something, and me too for him. I just wanted him to prosper, and all of a sudden, Dad, and so Frances, his mom, Greg's mom, called me up and asked me if I would call up his dad and try to convince him to, either refinance the properties or sell them or something so Greg could get going again. And his father was an engineer, and he was hearing nothing of it. And so he went and got a job at First American Title Company. And because I told him that I would never talk to him again if he ever went back to janitoring. You know, you don't repeat the second or third grade. You just keep going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so he got a job at First American. And I said, you suck them dry. You're right there. You're inside the castle. You suck them dry of every single thing they got going and this and that. And Greg's the opposite of me as far as religion. He's a born-again Christian. And here I am, the atheist, and we're the closest of buddies. I think the world of him. I call him my Jesus freak. He calls me his atheist, you know, stuff like that. But
So at the end of the day, he's been fairly successful, I think.
Yeah, he's worth millions. Millions and millions. Much more than I am. Absolutely. He took it and just ran with it. He did tremendously, tremendously maniacal work ethic that guy had. I've never seen anybody work any harder than he did. I'm talking every single day of the week, 7 days a week, six in the morning to, nine at night type of thing. Just absolutely amazing. And he started he decided after 2 years that he learned as much as he possibly could. I implored him to leave on good standing. I wanted him to have an open door between himself and First American, and he did so that they let him keep his key to the company after he left. He could go in there and use their computer and all the services, which I thought was quite a coup for him. And his dad's, I don't know the story behind that, but ultimately relented. And so he now got a pile of cash together. But before he did that, he started a foreclosure notice service up in Orange County, because I told him, I said, listen, there's only one up there, and so why don't you create a service, and we'll build it up. It'll be your service, and you own it, and this and that. We'll have fun making the company, and then you sell it. And you sell it for $60,000, $80,000, $100,000. There's your cash to get into the business. So, and we can do that working together. I'll help you as much as I possibly can, and in a year you'll be able to sell an ongoing turnkey business to somebody. And so, wow, off we went. And so I used to go up there once a month on what we called a help day on Saturdays, and I would go up there. Ultimately, got to be a guy up there at 8 o'clock in the morning and left at about 6 on a Saturday, and we used a community room at a bowling alley. Because my wife was quite a bowler, and I learned that they had community rooms that they let you use for free if you had a group of people who might be eating in a restaurant, and free parking and all that. And those were doorbuster types of meetings, and nobody was doing that sort of thing. And but you couldn't come in unless you were a subscriber to Greg's service, and you were a paid-up subscriber.
Mm-hmm. Now, annually, you have a gathering of all of your students, if they wish to come.
Yes. How many? Yeah, we call that a reunion.
A reunion. How often, how many people show up to that typically?
Usually about 100 to 120.
And yeah. Most of them pretty successful in the business?
Yes. Those are the doers. The people that, as you know, in the training business, you can have all kinds of people that have, they've got the brains, they've got the money, they've got, they seem motivated, but when it gets right on down to brass tacks, it's absolutely flabbergasting to me that the people that I think are going to take off like crazy don't ever seem to do it, you know? And so, but anyways, yeah, it's a... It's the people who are doing something in the business that are usually coming. And they love fraternizing. They love forming. We've had people get married who met at the reunions. We've had all kinds of businesses, guys get together because birds of a feather like to flock together. And especially if they're in the same county, they combine forces, they combine tasks, and they combine their money and on and on, and it really pans out well for them.
You've been training people for a long time. You see people that have all the ability, but then they don't do it. What's the ingredient for the people that do versus the ones that have not?
I almost think it's they're not desperate enough. I mean, I didn't get into this business when I knew there was foreclosures. I poked at it in 76, and oh, gee, you know, didn't have enough time. And then I did it again, stupidly, in 1978. And then I waited another 4 years after that until 1982. And then I had absolutely nothing going for me. It was a blessing in disguise that I had no job or easy job that I was making a lot of money at. You know, I call it a mink line rut. You got a job, and you're making a lot of money at it, and you can't stand it, though. It's so boring. It doesn't use all of your native abilities, and but yet you don't dare go on out and bet on yourself and try on something else because that's unknown. So what if I don't make it, you know? So that's what keeps people.
How has the industry changed, let's say, in the last, since the downturn? I mean, there's been... Obviously, there's been a big price damage, and you know there were for a few years there where prices were going down like a rock, and not many lenders were cutting loose with properties. And then, probably, what was the first good year after the downturn for people in the trustee sale business, where there was margins and there was properties?
Well, actually, there's, you know, I would think that we had 2006 time when it just started seeming to come unraveled. From 96 to 06, the 10-year a time period when it was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened now is it's, see, in the old days, when I got started in 1982 in San Diego, there was just three of us, max three steady Eddies that showed up all the time and were bidding. We'd every once in a while have a new guy show up, hang around a month or so, and you never see him again, stuff like that. And we were over a million population then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most people didn't know how to spell the word foreclosure. And so we kind of like had it to ourselves, you know. And so we gradually grew to three or four. We'd resent the newcomers that came, and after a while they'd hang on, and so then they became part of the regulars too. But it just became the popularity. All of a sudden we hit a critical point where, you know, foreclosures is in the newspaper, foreclosures is on TV, they're making movie scripts out of foreclosure, you know, nonsense, and just on and on and on. And I think it cheapened it, or somehow it made people think that anybody could get into foreclosures. It couldn't be that hard. Look at all these other people. Everybody's talking about it and talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. It can't be that complex and that difficult. And so we'd have just absolutely morons, sorry to be that strong of a word, but just literally morons show up and bid and buy something that they didn't even know all the liens against it. And we would look at each other, the pros, and our jaws would drop, you know, and you'd hear this slapping of our foreheads all the time. We couldn't believe it, you know.
Which brings up kind of a point. Is there much protection at a trustee sale for, like, if you're about to make a mistake, that the fellow bidders will come to your aid?
No.
I'm kidding.
No way. I once did it, you know, and I was rebuffed, and I can understand why. There was a gentleman who was an older gentleman, and I just was suspicious that he might not know that he was bidding on a second. He probably thought he was bidding on a first. And so that this made this thing the stinko, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to him and I said, look, you know, I haven't seen you before. And so I'm just wondering if you've done all your research on this deal. You know, sir, I've got it handled, okay? Thank you very much. You know, I called up my title rep and so I know what's going on with this property. Thank you very much. I appreciate it, blah, blah, blah. And, of course, he went ahead and bid on it. And that must have gone crosswise in his throat. There's no way that guy made anything. He lost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on that property.
Oh.
So you know, it's natural for people to think that you're trying to throw them a curveball in a very competitive environment down at the foreclosures. Because why? I mean, you went down there to bid. Why would you be telling a complete stranger, you know, some important information? So logically, it doesn't fit, and so I just gave up doing it after that.
It's interesting that you attempted it in the first place, though.
Yeah. I didn't do it just once. I did it a couple of times. It takes me a while to catch on.
Well, you know, here we are now in 2013, and news articles come out now about price aggression, prices are increasing, and not a lot for sale in the MLS. So I guess, what do you make of this market, and where do you see opportunities for investors to make money?
Well, the guys, and I have a steady stream of my trainees, because I always have an open door policy with my trainees, telling them, you can call me until you die, and on any question concerning your training course, and you don't owe me another penny. And so that open door has allowed me to really kind of like keep up with the tempo as time goes on. And I asked the guys, so what's happening now? What's your biggest problems? What do you wish that could, if you had a magic wand, would go away, and all this kind of stuff. And they seem to be prospering by looking into the niches, the areas that are not the most obvious areas, bidding at the foreclosures of junior liens, seconds. Wow, nobody always wants to do that. And bidding on properties that have IRS liens, and bidding on properties that are older than 10 years. And, you know, all the stuff that the the hedge fund guys and the newbies turn their nose up at, oftentimes there's a gem in that pile. And so if they've got just a mom and pop operation, low overhead, and they can make $30,000-$40,000 on that deal, and stitch together, let's say, 8 to 10 or 12 of those a year, hey, that's a pretty good deal for them.
It is.
Yeah.
Has the access to information changed the trustee sale business, the easy access?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I saw that very early in the game, very, very early in the game. And I seriously, in 1984, seriously thought of buying our foreclosure notice service company. It was all by hand at that time, but buying it and then just closing it. And my wife and I had a discussion about it, you know, and she said, "You're nuts. What will happen is," she's pretty practical. She says, "Somebody else will open one up, you know, in the vacuum. What are you going to keep opening? You keep buying everybody that starts a foreclosure notice service company?"
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a guy like Sean
O'Toole?
Yeah. Has a fabulous service. The more fabulous it is for the average man, the worse it is for a pro. That is absolutely worse. If everybody knew what you and I knew, you know, we'd be competing against ourselves. You know, it's just so. Yeah, I always wish. That's why I have this saying: "What you think is good is bad.
Mm-hmm.
What you think is bad is good." And I really believe in that. That started way, way, way back. Days when these new things called personal computers came out, and everybody's jumping up and down with joy, and I go, "Oh no, 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 no! This is not going to be good."
Is it a good time to accumulate some dingbat investments? And what are dingbat investments?
Well, a dingbat is a niche, you know, and it's a niche in the rental market. Everybody thinks that a tenant is a tenant is a tenant. It couldn't be further wrong. And so I made a timeline for a person's life and said, okay, from 0 to 25, you're just growing and learning and, you know, and going to school and this and that. And then you join the workforce from 25 to 65. And that's at 40 years when you have a lot of disruption in your life. A marriage is a disruption. Having kids is a disruption. Job changes are a disruption. Just on and on and on, and it manifests itself, as far as me, a renter is concerned, a rental landlord, with people wanting to move for all these reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I have vacancies and vacancies. Then from 65, you're retired, you got your gold watch, and you're not going to be getting divorced anymore after 65, or maybe not even married anymore after 65, and you're sure not going to have any more kids, and the kids are grown, and have gone, and things settle down, and far fewer disruptions. And I love it to rent to people from 65 to 85. That is the absolute sweet spot in a rental market, because that tenant wants exactly what I want, wants no surprises, no changes, just wants to be left alone and not be bothered. I rent to retired seniors, especially if they're on Section 8. Then I have the guarantee that the federal government's going to cover their rent or the bulk of it, and they're going to come up with the other 10%.
And this is typically...
And my,
is it
my
typically
turnover now is down to 16.2 years.
16.2 years is how long they stay?
That's correct.
Okay. And it's typically a one-bedroom house?
It's always.
It's always a one-bedroom.
One-bedroom, one-bath house.
Okay. Well, Ward... you are one unique individual. I've learned a lot from you. I paid for Greg to take your training, and I told Greg at the time I would pay $5,000 for you just to be able to pick up the phone and talk to Ward.
Yeah.
So it's been a pleasure interviewing you. Thank you so much for joining us.
You betcha, and I was happy to be on your show.
Ward, great. Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.